So we are going to learn Chula Samyutta Sutta, the lesser discourse on emptiness. I have heard that on one occasion, the Blessed One was staying at Savatthi in the Eastern Monastery, the palace of Nigara's mother. Then in the evening, Venerable Ananda, coming out of seclusion, went to the Blessed One and on arrival, having bowed down to him, sat to one side. As he was sitting there, he said to the Blessed One, on one occasion, when the Blessed One was staying among the Sakyans in a Sakyan town named Nagaraka, they are face to face with the Blessed One. I heard this. Face to face, I learned this. I now remain fully in a dwelling of emptiness. Did I hear that correctly? Learn it correctly. Attend to it correctly. Remember it correctly. Yes, Ananda, you heard that correctly. Learned it correctly. Attended to it correctly. Remembered it correctly. Now, as well as before, I remain fully in a dwelling of emptiness. Just as this place of Nigara's mother is empty of elephants, cattle and mass, empty of gold and silver, empty of assemblies of women and men, and there is only this non-emptiness, the singleness based on the community of monks. Even so, Ananda, a monk not attend to the perception of village, not attend to the perception of human beings, attend to the singleness based on the perception of wilderness. His mind takes pleasure, finds satisfaction, settle and indulge in the perception of wilderness. So wilderness means a temple in the forest over here. He discerns that whatever disturbances that would exist based on the perception of village are not present. Whatever disturbances that would exist based on the perception of human beings are not present. There is only this modicum of disturbance, the singleness based on the perception of wilderness. He discerns that this mode of perception is empty of the perception of village. This mode of perception is empty of perception of human being. There is only this non-emptiness, the singleness based on the perception of wilderness. Thus he regards it as empty of whatever is not there. Whatever remains, he discerns as present. There is this, and so this is entry into emptiness. Accords with actuality, is undistorted in meaning and view. So what is meant over here? The monk is going on an alms round, and then when monk is going there, then he sees that there are these men and women in the village, gold and silver is there. After that one, he is coming to the temple, and then he sees that those women and men, and then those, you know, ornaments, gold and silver, they are not here. So, empty from those things. Whatever thing is not there, he considers it as empty of that. Whatever thing present, in this case, monks are there. So, then he considers from those things, it is non-empty. Now, so here it says the accords with the actuality is undistorted in meaning and view. What does that mean? That means no perversions. You know, if the monk, having seen a beautiful woman while going in the alms round, coming to the temple, then if he is actually thinking, today I saw a beautiful woman, then his mind is not empty because he has carried that woman to the temple. So, if you are using the mindfulness regarding body, and then it is produced, and then foulness of perception, you know, ugliness and there's 32 parts of the body that one is remaining. And then you have contemplated the rising and passing away phenomena. Then you don't have that perversion. So you are not bringing that woman to the temple. So that is what it meant. Now, next one is the perception of earth. Further, Ananda, the monk not attend to the perception of human beings, not attend to the perception of wilderness, attend to the singleness based on the perception of earth. His mind takes pleasure, find satisfaction, settle and indulge in his perception of earth. Just as a bull's hide is stretched free from wrinkles with 100 stakes, even so, without attending to all the ridges and hollows, the river ravines and tracks of stumps and thorns, the craggy irregularities of this earth, he attends to the singleness based on the perception of earth. His mind takes pleasure, finds satisfaction, and indulges in the perception of earth. So, here the monk now sees that in the temple there is a building. So, that building is made of element of extension. So, now he is actually thinking that everyone here in the temple, the monks, rather than thinking, you know, friendly monk and unfriendly monk and that sort of thing, they are thinking all of them are just the element of extension, nothing else. So, Buddha is actually giving few words over there that takes pleasure, finds satisfaction, settles and indulges. What is it means by that? It is entering, like, you know, that let us say husband and wife fight each other, and then one person is going to the shrine room. So then he enters the shrine room, and then so Buddha statue is there. Then so he takes pleasure on that room, and then finds satisfaction and settles. In the other hand, let us say some sort of a, you know, mattress or something there, you sit down and you become steady, like sit down. And then there is resolution for that person. Yes, it is suffering. You know, this life is suffering. So likewise, you enter to that this is only the element of extension, nothing more. And then that mind enter, and then there is a resolution. There is nothing more. It's just element of extension. So the Buddha is giving you example as well. Now, if you take this cow skin, and then you can see there are some wrinkles in it. So, if you drag that one from 100 pegs, then you can see it's sort of a flat thing. And so, likewise, that, you know, this earth has got this craggy irregularities, and, you know, the river ravines and so on. So, rather than attending to those things, that you are thinking it's like a flat. So, what it means is at this particular point, practically, what do you think? I'll be driving a bulldozer, and then you make the whole earth flat. What is the problem for you to see the far away objects? Because there are these buildings, you know, the mountains, slopes and so on. So if you make it flat using a bulldozer, then you can see sort of a ground. So large area. What do you get when you see a large area? You get a concentration. This was told to me by Godnatha. So you see some people are going to the beach, and then they see, you know, they are just sitting down looking at the sea. Their mind get concentrated because they see a vast area. You know, if there is a sort of a island or something, then you would be looking at whether there is a creature in that one. If there is no island or anything, then you see a vast area, and the far away you can't even see these water waves, you know, falling either. So you get a concentration. So what you need to do that you make take a bulldozer and make it this whole thing flat like a ground, and then you see a vast area, and then you get the concentration. So we are regarding over there here the everything is element of extension. So he discerns that whatever disturbances that would exist based on the perception of human beings are not present. Whatever disturbances that would exist based on the perception of wilderness are not present. There is only this modicum of disturbance, the singleness based on the perception of earth. He discerns that this mode of perception is empty of the perception of human beings. The mode of perception is empty of the perception of wilderness. There is only this non-emptiness, the singleness based on the perception of earth. Thus he regards it as empty of whatever is not there. Whatever remains he discerns as present. There is this. And so this is entry into emptiness, accord with actuality, is undistorted in meaning and pure. So undistorted means that he knows that it is only the element of extension, that's all. And in this scenario, when you are actually making the earth flat sort of scenario, you are taking the water as element of extension as well, because it has also got hardness as well. So next, when you see, when you make this earth flat and scenario, and then you see a faraway thing, and then after that one, you see this earth is sort of ending over here. After that, what you get is space. So that is what mentioned next, the infinitude of space. Or on the other hand, it is called perception of base of infinite space. Further, Ananda, the monk, not attained to the perception of wilderness, not attending to the perception of earth, attend to the singleness based on the perception of the dimension of infinitude of space. His mind takes pleasure, finds satisfaction, settles and indulges in the perception of dimension of infinitude of space. He discerns that whatever disturbances that would exist based on the perception of wilderness are not present. Whatever disturbances that would exist based on the perception of earth are not present. There is only this modicum of disturbance, the singleness based on the perception of the dimension of the infinitude of space. He discerns that this mode of perception is empty of the perception of wilderness. This mode of perception is empty of the perception of earth. There is only this non-emptiness, the singleness based on the perception of the dimension of the infinitude of space. Thus he regards it as empty of whatever is not there. Whatever remains, he discerns as present. There is this. And so this his entry into emptiness accords with the actuality. He is undistorted in meaning and pure. So to do this one, that you see the element of extension is there. And then you need to go to the spaces infinite. To do that one, we should know the element of extension as the element of extension. And have no doubt and that it is not mine. You should have the idea that it is not mine. And then you should have the faith that it is not mine. If you do that one, then you see a black space. You know, the day that there is no full moon, no clouds, and then far away you see a couple of stars. So that is spaces infinite. Some people are saying me that when he was actually driving the bulldozer, that couple of trees left. What he meant was that when he was driving the bulldozer, the baby came in front. So then that person was thinking, how can I drive the bulldozer over the baby? So here we are not talking about killing anyone. What we are asking is, consider that this one has the element of extension. Baby got the element of extension as well. So again, this is the beauty. You know, if you say just element of extension is not mine, then you are saying, yeah, it is not mine. But if you ask, can you drive the bulldozer over the baby, then you can see you are still regarding baby as mine. And one person said that when he was driving, he saw a monk who is coming in front. And then how can I drive over the monk? Now even a Buddha is there, you have to drive that. You know, one day, this King Kosal in India, he went to the Buddha and he was kissing from his mouth Buddha's feet, and then Buddha was asking the king, what is the point of this? You know, this is a disgusting body, and why is this treatment? And then you see that Buddha is telling that my body is of full of this excrement, urine and all those things. So when you say a word Buddha, then you can't exceed, that is the name part, you can't exceed Buddha's form. So then that means you are failing. So even the Buddha is there, you need to consider as element of extension. So if you are successful, then you are going to space is infinite thing. Again, you learn another method for going there. Remember that you learn in the Vattu Sutra, the envy, and if you consider what is it stemming from, that is derogation, then if you get rid of the envy, then you can go to the space is infinite level of concentration. And there is another way of doing that. And Buddha is saying in many discourses, with the complete transcendence of perception of forms, with the passing away of perception of sensory impingements, with non-attention to the perception of diversity, that one enter and abide in the space's infinite level of concentration. So with non-attention to the perception of diversity means that you need to there is something in the consciousness, because consciousness is flowing like a stream, so it has got this perception, feeling and all those things is going with that. And it's like that you constructed consciousness starting from the left side, physical neutron, and then you contact, you get the perception, feeling, volition, and then you come to the consciousness. Having reached the consciousness, now you should not be coming back again to the form. Like, the paintbrush, you paint it to the right side and then you should not be coming back to the left. It's like, let us say, a businessman. He is old because give his daughter, sons, you do this part, you do that part of the business. And let us say one daughter or one son can't do, but one is doing. Then, business is going. The sons, I am talking about these feeling perceptions. So, if you are not coming back to the physical nutriment again, then you can have the non-attention to the perception of diversity. And then the passing away of perception of sensory impingements. You see, why my grandfather was grumpy? His taste buds are gone. So, he somehow wanted to have those things. So he's demanding very heavily, let me have the form that I used to, taste and so on. So that part should not be there. And then with the complete transcendence of perception of forms. So transcendence of forms can be done when the form is very minute or insignificant. You see, when you look at an ant, you look the other way around. If you look at an elephant, you sort of, look at more in that one, you are getting stuck over there. Because ant is insignificant. So you can sort of get that idea. Now let us say on a mountain slope, there is a girl and a boy. While girl is standing there, the boy is climbing the mountain. Halfway through, that boy can't see this girl's body, this part is above, this part is below, the sign and features. And let us say this boy is going to the top of the mountain. Now he can't determine whether this one is actually cow dung or whether this girl. So you are exceeding that form. And let us say we send that boy to a star. So over here star is small, but when you go to star, star is really big. And then if you look at from the star and looking back Earth, Earth is very small, tiny. And then the houses inside, they are tiny. And the people inside are tiny. So they are becoming insignificant like that ant. And then you exceed. So that method can be used as well. So now if you go into that space is infinite, then you are in this the shortest path over here, mindfulness to emptiness and then the wisdom and mindfulness. and at that particular time you exceed four, and then you are exceeding the craving for sensuality. The craving for sensuality is in the first path, physical nutriment path. So you exceed that one. And then the next one is infinitude of consciousness. So here, further Ananda, the monk, not attending to the perception of earth, not attending to the perception of the dimension of the infinitude of space, attend to the singleness based on the perception of the dimension of the infinitude of consciousness. His mind takes pleasure, finds satisfaction, settles and indulges in his perception of the dimension of the infinitude of consciousness. He discerns that whatever disturbances that would exist based on the perception of the earth are not present. Whatever disturbances that would exist based on the perception of the dimension of infinitude of space are not present. There is only this modicum of disturbance, the singleness based on the perception of the dimension of the infinitude of consciousness. He discerns that this mode of perception is empty of the perception of earth. This mode of perception is empty of the perception of the dimension of the infinitude of space. There is only this non-emptiness, the singleness based on the perception of the dimension of the infinitude of consciousness. Thus he regards it as empty of whatever is not there. Whatever remains, he discerns as present. There is this. And so this is entry into emptiness accordance with actuality is undistorted in meaning and pure. So for you to go there, you need to should know the impermanence of feeling. That feeling arising from the perception of base of infinitude of space. So you are looking at the space is infinite, you are there, and then there is a feeling associated with that. Now you consider that feeling is impermanent. So when you do that one, then you are going to the consciousness is infinite. That will be marked from the represented from the mindfulness to this number 10, this emptiness over here. If you reach there, you see a light. That light is your light. You see your forehead has got the right side. That is the faculty of wisdom. The forehead left side, the faculty of mindfulness. They get illuminated and then you see, some people see it in color. Now, normally, how you would see that one, let us say there are these clouds on the sky and then someone has put bulbs to that one. You can see the light, but you don't see the bulbs. Or maybe someone having a torch, you can see a beam is actually going, but the origin, that the torch part, you can't see. If you have a sort of an attainment level of this one, then you would be seeing sort of a picture like this one. You know, this whole black space is there, and inside that the light is there. And then if you don't have the attainment, if you see the black space, then you will be fallen. That is the trouble for a person who is in the consciousness is infinite level. It's like that when you are meditating over here, if someone is making a curry and smell is coming up, then you are actually paying attention, what is that curry? So likewise, if you are in the consciousness is infinite, if you touches the space is infinite, then you will be fallen. And to go there, you also know another method, which you learned in the first day, second meditation. You know, if you know the derogation, and if you know derogation is stemming from anger, and then if you give up derogation, then you can go to this consciousness is infinite level of attainment. And there is another way to do this one. You see that we got these diagrams, that we got these things from the Akhanditta Brahmarila. So if you have gratitude, having followed these diagrams, I managed to go into such and such state. So then if you pay the gratitude to those great arahants in the Akanita Brahma realm, then you can easily go into this sixth jhana. You can even see their lights as well. But to, you know, you can do the same thing by, you know, thinking about the Buddha, paying gratitude to the Buddha. But is Buddha there? Buddha is no more. He attained final Nirvana. So, those days when Buddha was there, if people were paying gratitude to the Buddha, they would have gone easily to the sixth jhana. Today, only, you know, you by learning Dhamma or that by paying gratitude to those arahants, living arahants, then you can do. That's another way of doing that one. That's a very easy way. You see, by seeing teaching, you see Buddha. And what is seen Buddha means that you see the teaching. So, now we mentioned three ways of going there. And then, do you know that your consciousness is getting established anywhere because of your allowing dependent origination to occur? You know, dependent origination has got 12 links. Because of the ignorance, volitional formations come to be. Because of the volitional formation, consciousness come to be. So likewise, because of the existence, birth as condition, aging, sickness. So 12 links are there. So then, since you are allowing this one to occur, then your consciousness is getting established. So the Buddha's knowledge is such. Buddha is saying that you don't need to have these 12 knowledges for you to go out of this sixth jhana. You need to know only one link. Because of the contact, feeling come to arise. If you know that one, then you can get out of this sixth jhana. So, which you can see easily in this diagram. Here we have the mindfulness. We have the emptiness over here. In that line, there is feeling. So, left side is the contact. Because of the contact, feeling come to arise. With the cessation of contact, cessation of feeling. So, what does that mean? Feeling is impermanent, isn't it? The arising and passing. So, if you see that feeling is impermanent, then you are exceeding the craving for existence. You see, the craving for existence is in the contact as nutriment path. So you are exceeding that one, and then you are going to the plane of nothing. So which will be marked or represented from the emptiness to the wisdom over here. That is the seventh jhana. So that is what is mentioned next. The nothingness. Further Ananda, the monk not attentive to the perception of the dimension of the infinitude of space, not attentive to the perception of the dimension of the infinitude of consciousness, attentive to the singleness based on the perception of the dimension of nothingness. His mind takes pleasure, finds satisfaction, settled and indulged in his perception of the dimension of nothingness. He discerns that whatever disturbances that would exist based on the perception of the dimension of the infinitude of space are not present. Whatever disturbances that would exist based on the perception of the dimension of infinitude of consciousness are not present. There is only this modicum of disturbance, the singleness based on the perception of the dimension of nothingness. He discerns that this mode of perception is empty of the perception of dimension of infinitude of space. This mode of perception is empty of the perception of the dimension of infinitude of consciousness. There is only this non-emptiness, the singleness based on the perception of the dimension of nothingness. Thus he regards it as empty of whatever is not there. whatever remains he discerns as present. There is this. And so this his entry into emptiness accords with the actuality, is undistorted in meaning and beyond. So here, how you go there, this is the seventh jhana, that you contemplate the impermanence of feeling. If you are successful, you can reach the seventh jhana. If you go there, then what you would be actually seeing, you know that black space we were talking about, and then we were talking about the beam of light, sixth jhana. So let us say this beam of light is broken into pieces, and then over there a dot of light, and over there there is another light dot scattered around the sky. So that sort of thing that you see. And by that time you feel your right side of the head, forehead, is sort of open and it's vast, and then you are connected with some sort of emptiness. That's how you would normally feel. So if you have the attainment level, then you would sort of see sort of a different picture. You know that the cone that we have got separating these, you know, vehicles' paths, red one. So inside the cone, you can see it is white. You know, the light is there. And the top part is sort of black. So the black part, what you see, the head part, is the consciousness is infinite. The round white one is the light of the plane of nothing. It has got more light than the consciousness is infinite. Why is it called plane of nothing? You see, there are six elements. Element of extension, element of cohesion, element of motion, element of heat, and then space is infinite and consciousness is infinite. Those are the six elements. Now, if you get rid of those six, what you left with? Nothing, nothing. So that is what is called plane of nothing. And then you also learn another method, how you can actually go into this one. Vittavattubhu Sutra. If you get rid of fraud, sateya, then you can go to the seventh jhana. And there is another method, which you already have done it. That in Pali it's called shunyamidam attenava yenava, that is empty of self and what belongs to self. Remember, we were coming over here and then we are reaching this seventh jhana. So in this case, that you know, you get rid of that feeling part, and then because feeling is impermanent, and then you manage to go to the seventh jhana. So then the next one is, so let us say that you actually got rid of, you know, that using the techniques, that empty of self and what belongs to self. What that means? That means that you are sitting down over here and then you are saying, these sound equipments, these projectors, screens, computers, and whoever around me, they are not mine. None of them are mine. So you still have, while you are saying that one, you are sitting in the middle of this one and you are saying that, you know, any of these things are not mine. So then you have a perception that these things are not mine. So this person does not want to have that perception either. You see that he was actually eliminating every scenario. First, you know, went to arms round, saw women and so on, come back to the temple. He didn't bring any of these things. So then he is empty from those things, but was not empty because monks are there. And then he see the building, and then he was thinking this building is the element of extension. So these monks are also element of extensions. And then he went to the use the bulldozer type thing and completely they've got a very vast mind, seeing a life, vast area. And then he managed to go beyond that one. So he went to the spaces infinite, that this element of extension is not mine. And then he managed to go there. So then, after going to the spaces infinite, he found that whatever feeling associated with the spaces infinite also impermanent. So then he could go to the consciousness is infinite and then he saw light. And then there is a feeling over there as well. And then he contemplated the arising and passing away phenomena. That is because of the contact, feeling come to arise. Cessation of contact is cessation of feeling. So then he managed to go to the seventh jhana. So now he had got a perception. So he doesn't want to have that perception. So then he contemplated the impermanence of this perception. That is what is mentioned next. Neither perception nor non-perception. So before I go there, so what is the difference between the sixth jhana and the seventh jhana? Sampati Mahaprabhu said it is like a wound. Sixth jhana is like, you have a wound in your leg or somewhere. And the seventh jhana, that the wound is itching over here. But the seventh jhana, the wound is there, but it is not itching. So, because over here you have the feeling. So, the itching part is there. And this is the particular line, you don't have the feeling. So, therefore, it is the wound is there, but it's not itching. And Buddha said, some people are saying, this one is a vomit. Why they say vomit? You know, before entering the seventh jhana, there is a perception. When you go there, you have a post-perception, that is sickness. So, therefore, it's like a vomit. So, this person does not want this perception either. So, let's go to the next one. Further Ananda, the monk not attending to the perception of the dimension of the infinitude of consciousness, not attending to the perception of the dimension of nothingness, attend to the singleness based on the dimension of neither perception nor non-perception. His mind takes pleasure, finds satisfaction, settles and indulges in the dimension of neither perception nor non-perception. He discerns whatever disturbances that would exist based on the perception of the dimension of the infinitude of consciousness are not present. Whatever disturbances that would exist based on the perception of the dimension of nothingness are not present. There is only this modicum of disturbance. The singleness based on the dimension of neither perception nor non-perception. He discerns that this mode of perception is empty of the perception of the dimension of the infinitude of consciousness. This mode of perception is empty of the perception of the dimension of nothingness. There is only this non-emptiness. The singleness based on the dimension of neither perception nor non-perception. Thus he regards it as empty of whatever is not there. Whatever remains, he discerns as present. There is this, and so this entry into emptiness accords with the actuality, is undistorted in meaning and view. So here, that you are applying this impermanence to the perception. When you are doing that one, then you would be successful to a certain extent. To what extent? That is that the constructed volitional formations are not mine. To that extent, if you understand the perception is impermanent, then you reach neither perception nor non-perception. That is from the mindfulness to wisdom. So, one good example is, let us say, a carpenter got 3 pieces of wood to construct a table. And the 2 pieces are fine. And the 1 wood piece is rotten, insect bites and all those things are there. So carpenter didn't have a choice, he constructed a table. And then to the right side of the table, he can see now that rotten wood piece is there. Now early days, when the carpenter constructed the table, he would be writing his name underneath. In a wood piece, he would be writing it. Now he is afraid this one will be broken. So he is not going to write down his name. In other words, the carpenter's, the wood face is the perception. And carpenter's construction of this table is the volitional formation. So maybe mind formations or whatever formations. So now he is not regarding these formations as mind. So he did not see that all the wood pieces are, you know, as impermanent. He saw two pieces are good, one piece is rotten. So don't take it as just one third of impermanence. To the extent, whatever construction that you make, volitional formations, and if you are not regarding as mind, then you can reach ajna. Why it is called neither perception nor non-perception? Because there are no two perceptions. Here you can see, when you are entering the eighth jhana, there is this perception. And then this, you know, this part, bottom part over here, sickness thing, it is not there for him. Because he is in that top line only. It is like someone is actually giving you a toffee with chemicals in it. You are aware that he is putting the toffee, and after that one you don't see, because you know, like you sleep and your unconsciousness, so you don't see. So eighth jhana is like that one. That you go into the eighth jhana, you are not aware of that one, then you know your head is falling and then you know that you have gone there. But this one should not be confused with your sleep. You know, some people when they meditate, they go to sleep as well. So this one is sort of different, because when you are doing the meditation, you are contemplating the arising and passing away phenomena of perception. So when you are coming back also, then you know that one is still occurring with you. So then you can sort of recognize, oh, this is the ajna. Your perception is very thin at that particular time. Before you reach there, some people sort of feel that, you know, my throat is sort of something happening over there, and then less like somebody's, you know, pushing me, or, you know, your pulse is becoming very heavy, and then some people feel like their face is freezing. So if you react to that one, then you won't reach eight down. And at this particular time, what you should be thinking, it doesn't matter, even if I die over here, it is okay, because I am going to be born in good place, in the ajna. So if you react, you don't reach there. Some people think, if someone is actually looking at me, then they will see me very ugly, because my space is, you know, frozen or something. They don't see that one. It is internally, that's how you feel. And when you come out of it, you see some pictures. You see a sort of a hand, you know, leg part, a stomach, or a head, that sort of thing. What are they? They are actually your past births. You know, in these particular spots, you might have died many, many times. So they are your past births. So you actually see those things. And sometimes you see the people here as well. Their ones also can be seen. If you try to recognize, this person is that one and so on, then you will be fallen from the eighth jhana. You should be continuing that this is, you know, arising and passing away phenomena of perception. One seek delight, one welcomes, that part has to be applied. So that is the eighth jhana. So there is a danger of this seeing pictures as well, isn't it? Let us say that you saw some sort of a one of your former births, this sensual, you know, sexual acts or whatever, that sort of thing. What will happen? Then you will go to hell, you know, looking for, you know, buying those things. Sensual thought, illy thought, harmy thoughts. So this is the danger. This Buddha said, whatever the plane is, except those, this pure abodes where the never returns are being born, anyone, you know, if he has not attained to noble level, whatever the plane, then after death, most of them will go to hell, animal realm, plane of departure, because they see that picture sort of scenario. The neither perception nor non-perception person is not even thinking. So that person also, for 84,000 eons, he is not thinking. You can't think in the original 8th jhana. Up to the 8th jhana you can think, 7th jhana you can think, and the 8th jhana you can't. So it is when you are coming out of it. So that person is also going to hell. There is another way to reach this one. Remember, we were looking at the disparaging palasam. If you understand disparaging and what is it stemming from, and if you get rid of that one, then you can go to the 8th jhana. And then it says the themeless concentration. Further, Ananda, the monk, not attending to the perception of the dimension of nothingness, not attending to the perception of dimension of neither perception nor non-perception, attend to the singleness based on the themeless concentration of awareness. His mind takes pleasure, finds satisfaction, settles and indulges in its themeless concentration of awareness. He discerns that whatever disturbances that would exist based on the perception of dimension of nothingness are not present. Whatever disturbances that would exist based on the perception of dimension of neither perception nor non-perception are not present. And there is only this modicum of disturbance that connected with the six sensory spheres. Depend on this very body, with life as its condition, he discerns that this mode of perception is empty of the perception of the dimension of nothingness. This mode of perception is empty of the perception of the dimension of neither perception nor non-perception. There is only this non-emptiness that connected with the six sensory spheres. Depending on this very body, with life as its condition, thus he regards it as empty of whatever is not there. Whatever remains, he discerns as person. There is this. And so this his entry into emptiness accords with actuality, is undistorted in meaning and pure. So there are this the themeless concentration of awareness. Themeless, sometimes translated as signless abiding. What is the signless? There is no sign of permanence. So that is actually called prajna vimukti, or liberation due to wisdom, which will be marked or represented in this particular spot of the wisdom. How you reach over there? You went to the 7th jhana and then you contemplate the impermanency of perception. That is what you are doing before you reach in the 8th jhana as well. So you are successful to the extent that the volitional formations are not mine, then you reach 8th jhana. But you keep on continuing. Then you can go to the liberation due to wisdom, if you are completely successful over there. If it happens, then you feel your forehead, the right side is active. That's what you sort of feel. This is like, you know, that some people are walking. They see something and little while later, they say this is also impermanent. Let us say not like that one. You are, you know, applying this contemplation of impermanency, the arising and passing. And when you see the object also, it is coming, arising and passing. It is not, you know, delayed response to that object. That is this liberation due to wisdom. To be there, then you got to have something called this sampajana. You know, remember we were looking at this asampajana here, absence of awareness. Now here you got to have the presence of this awareness over here. And help of that one is needed to remain in this liberation due to wisdom. So if I am to explain this, the awareness part, you know that there are these two sticks. One stick is, you say, one seek delight, one welcome, one remain holy. By doing that one, delight come to arise. Delight is clinging, clinging as condition, existence, existence as birth. So this is the one stick. And there is another stick, that one does not seek delight, does not welcome, does not remain voluntary. So the delight ceases, then the clinging ceases, the existence ceases, the birth ceases. So this is another stick. Let us take these two sticks to one hand. This part is the arising, this part is passing. Now you are saying, if the craving ceases, this whole stick would cease. An example would be, when do you stop eating? Is it when your stomach is full? Or is it that you don't have craving to eat anymore? If you say, when my stomach is full, then someone is actually bringing you ice cream or curd and things like that one, honey, then you go with that one. So it's not stopped. But if you don't have craving, you are not going any further. And another example is that, you know, that tiger is not normally eating like us. When it kills an animal, then eats it. And for about 2 days or so, it is just not killing anyone, idling and looking at the sun, you know, sun rays. And then some creature is going nearby, it doesn't bother because craving is not there at that time. So that help should be there to remain in the liberation due to wisdom. And can someone become arrogant for the liberation due to wisdom? Normally you would say no. But it is not the case. You know, sometimes, let us say you went to the liberation due to wisdom, and then, you know, having lunch, your concentration is gone, and then you go to a friend of yours and say, today my meditation went very well. I felt my forehead as well, and I was in the liberation due to wisdom. And then the friend is saying, I have been meditating for 14 years. I could not reach there. So now you think, oh, this guy can't, I can. Then you become arrogant. But this liberation due to wisdom is also construction. And whatever the arrogance that you have for your construction, if you remove that one, then you can go to the liberation due to mind, which will be represented from this emptiness over here. So how do you go there? You take perception. You went to the seventh jhana, now you are saying perception is not mine. So then you can go into the liberation due to mind. For you to remain in that point, you got to have the help of this concentration due to desire. In other words, your mind should be focusing to the Nibbana. If you reach over there, then you sort of feel your left side of your head, face, pressurable. That is this, as I said, you have faculty of wisdom, right side, faculty of mindfulness on the left side of the forehead, and the back side, right side, faculty of effort, and the left side of forehead, faculty of concentration. Then you see something is coming from the right side, and joining from the faculty of effort to faculty of concentration, and then joining, and then you feel this left side is pleasurable. So that is the liberation due to mind. And so we have learned two liberations. And then there is a third one. Now we were looking at the perception as impermanent, and then we were looking at the perception as mind. What is the other one? That the perception is suffering. If you do that one, then you can go into the desireless abiding. And that one is called Appanita Chetu Vimukti in Pali. I can tell you that there is this third, that is the pleasant way with slow realization. You haven't studied that one. It has got two efforts. The effort over here, not to have the perception, not to take the perception as mind. And the effort down below is that it's a very strong one. and it is not taking volitional formations as mine. So from this effort, you might have heard there is this Pali word called Atapi Sampajana Sati. Atapi means the effort. Sampajana, you have this awareness over here. Satima is mindfulness. From that one, you are going to the measure state of equanimity. And from the measure state of equanimity, you can go into the desireless abiding. For you to go to the desireless abiding, show you the way to do that one. Remember this diagram, four neutrons suffering. Now what has happened here? Physical neutron, then you are coming to the birth. Contact as neutron, you are coming to aging. Mental volition as neutron, you are coming to sickness. Construction, consciousness as neutron, you are coming to death. So although you went zigzag, where you have been, birth, aging, sickness, death. If you do that one, then you get this measureless state of equanimity. Now let us go the other way around, opposite way. So if you go from death, after death, what is going to happen? You will be born. When you are being born, what do you get? Sickness. So you can see you die with the sickness. And having died with sickness, then you are going back to the sickness. What a stupid thing, isn't it? That's why Buddha is saying that everyone except an arahant is sort of mentally sick. In other words, that having got the sickness, you die and then you go back to sickness. Only the mentally sick person can do that. So then, if you do that one, then what you get is pain of nothing, seventh jhana. But if you go three things, backward, from the lamentation to sorrow, not getting what one wants to union with what is displacing, then what you get is the liberation due to pain of nothing. So how do you do that? You see, not getting what one wants, what does that mean? When someone subject to sickness, that person is thinking, it would be good if I am not subject to sickness. So in that case, the sickness is there inside the not getting what one wants. So that person is going to union with what is displacing. So that means the one example over here is that let us say that you Sunday afternoon you are in your garden, and then after lunch and so on, then all of a sudden you get a long breath and you think, tomorrow I have to go to office and present this one. And then you recall to your mind, no, that particular person is also there in the presentation. And then he is always troubling me. Now he is thinking, no, this is how I help him. Now this guy is now bad and doing this harm to me. And then you are actually digging a little bit further, and then you are thinking, oh, it's not only to me. That person did the same thing to the other person as well. That you had a calmness, and now you are actually, you dig, where are you going? What you get is union with what is displacing. Sometimes people are together and then calm, and then someone is saying, oh, that person is a really bad person. And then what do you do? I know that person did this one to the other person as well, Then they are putting together. So why are you going? You are going to the union with what is displacing. More you dig, that is what you are getting. And then from the lamentation, then you are actually running to sorrow. Why are we saying that you are running to sorrow? An example is, let us say you are doing this work on the paddy fields or something like that one. And then you need to have some sort of a, you know, not to water go away, you have a bunt or something you construct. And then you are tired, you come to have a cup of tea. So you made a cup of tea and then you come and sat down and try to drink it. And then someone is coming and with a beard and so on, and they say, "Sir, the what you constructed is now broken and water is going everywhere. And now you have some sort of a conceit, you know, it is the one that I constructed is the one broken. The other ones are there, the other people have done, it is there. So what do you think, you keep on drinking your tea? No, you are thinking I will go and construct this one next time with cement or something. So you are actually running. So if you have these three things going backward, then you get the liberation due to plane of nothing. And let us go another three things backward. Sickness to aging, sorrow to sadness, union with what is displacing to separation from what is pleasing. If you do that three, then you get the abiding in plane of nothing. In other words, that you are not shaking, you are just there. You are not getting out of that, you can be there. How do you do that? You can see the aging sadness contacted, you get the union with what is displacing. Now if you have sadness, means what? There must be something pleasure before, otherwise you don't get the sadness, isn't it? So now, thinking that there is something pleasurable, you go back, go into the separation from what is pleasing. So are you going to, what are you going to get? The separation from what is pleasing is that you had a baby type body, birth, and you're subject to aging, sickness and death, and you are in the mind-made body, you have not eaten, and you are separated from the baby type body, so separation from what is pleasing. So when you go there, you are not going to get it. You are going to get the same thing, separation from what is pleasing. So you had a sort of a determination, let me go there. And then you don't get it. So that is the, you can be in the plane of nothing without shaking. And that is what is called abiding in plane of nothing. In Pali is akinchana samapatti. And then if you go three things further backward, age into birth, sadness to pain, separation from what is based into distress. If you do that one, then you get the desireless abiding. How do you do that one? You see, birth, pain, separation from what is pleasing. And from there, you are going to distress. The what is distress? Distress is that, you know, that, remember, associate with anger, Kotali Sutta, the seventh one. Now, you can't live with fruit, you can't live without throwing away with the fruit as well. And then you can see that you tried the hell, were born in hell, and then it was not good. And then you thought that, let me try the animal realm. So then you were born as a, let us say, a rabbit. And then the lion is coming and eating the rabbit. And then you become, you thought, now let me have lion's form in the next birth. And then the hyena is coming and eating lion. And then you thought, okay, let me go to the plane of departure and go, you know, above. So, like a spirit. And then you find it is hungry, nothing to eat. And then you went to the human world. And you just like an ordinary human person. That is not good. So then you became a king. And you tried that one, and then people are coming to kill you as well. So then it is not good either. Then you went to the divine world. It is not good either, because then you are dying and all those things. And then you go to the Brahma world. And you haven't got anywhere else. Anywhere else to go, isn't it? So then you have this distress. And you are looking for, you know, you are in the mind-made body, you have not eaten. And having come that one, you are going back to the same thing. Nothing more. So if you, what you have done over here, you went forward and then in the reverse, backward. on this suffering thing, then you actually understand this is completely suffering. The perception is suffering. And that time, you feel your whole head is sort of split. The left side, that you have the faculty of mindfulness, the right side, behind, you have the faculty of effort, and they link, and then it's like a broken. So this is the one that people are talking about negative, isn't it? This is not negative, this is positive. More and more you actually go through this one, then you get the liberations. So this is the most valuable thing over here to analyze. We learn three liberations. Now you can see this is your head, isn't it? If you take this piece of paper and put it on your head, this is the mindfulness and the effort behind. And these two lines like a spit in the head over here. Or else you can see there is this trident over here. You know, trident is starting from the physical nutriment, and then you are going to this awareness, and then you have the concentration due to wisdom. And the left side of the trident, you can see going to the concentration due to desire, and then you get the liberation due to mind. And the middle, you can see that there is something that you can hit, and there's two lines coming from mindfulness, one is from the effort. So, or else you can see there is a girl over here. The girl's head is over here, physical nutriment, and the right side of her gown is that this liberation due to wisdom, and the left side is the liberation due to mind. And she got two legs over here. And for her, there is a hat. That hat is not attached over here. That is Nibbana. Nibbana is apart from all these liberations. So we learn three liberations over here. And so let us go back to the discourse. The release part. The further Ananda, the monk, not attend to the perception of dimension of nothingness, not attend to the perception of dimension of neither perception nor non-perception, attend to the singleness based on the themeless concentration of awareness. That is this liberation due to wisdom. His mind takes pleasure, finds satisfaction, settles and indulges in its themeless concentration of awareness. He discerns that this themeless concentration of awareness is fabricated and mentally fashioned. In other words, it's conditioned and volitionally produced. And he discerns that whatever is fabricated and mentally fashioned is inconstant. Inconstant means impermanent over here and subject to cessation. For him, thus knowing, thus seeing, the mind is released from the effluence of sensuality, the effluence of becoming, the effluence of ignorance. With release, there is knowledge release. He discerns birth is ended, holy life fulfilled. The task done, there is nothing further for this world. So, what is mean over here is that you are going to the liberation due to wisdom. Having reached there, and you think that liberation due to wisdom is also constructive. That I am still allowing, you know, that there are these 12 links. The as ignorance as condition, volitional formation as condition, consciousness. And the 12 links of the dependent origination. Now you think this particular one, because my consciousness is established, still I am allowing this one to occur. Then he understands when this craving is not there, this whole stick over here will vanish. But to understand that one, you need to understand this, you know, at least top link, middle link, and the last link, or all the links. So he understands when the craving is not there, this whole thing will disappear. But he understands the craving over here is not the same as the craving over here. Inside the dependent origination, Because of the contact, there is feeling. Because of the feeling, there is craving. That craving, you know, you have touched something, you tasted something, so there is this craving. So what is this one? This is the delight. That it is actually not complete apart from this one. But this one has grown great, isn't it? Because I want to be born again as well. So here we have the craving for existence, craving for sensuality, craving for non-existence. All those three things are there. And the craving for non-existence is the biggest one. And this person understands that even from craving for non-existence, you can live in, you know, places like pain of nothing. You can live for 60,000 great eons. And then although you can do that one, you will be still fallen. So, to understand this one, there is a subtle meaning over here. You know how a little child sort of understand this world? If you give the baby a ball, baby would be, you know, touching from the lips and so on. And then after some time, the baby would be saying that it's okay, I don't need the ball. But when I was touching the ball, I had some sort of feeling. And I want to live. So that is actually the craving for non-existence. So there is this idea inside this the baby regarding the ball, inside the some sort of a permanency associated with that form. So if you understand, even by going to the higher jhana concentration also, you can't maintain this one. Then you give up the form at the end. You see, you go to higher concentration, but still there is an element of, you know, permanency associated with the form is there. And then you get rid of that one, then you become, you know, you destroy cankers. So at this particular time, that what you have is the highest right to you. The highest right to you has only the third noble truth. The other ones are not there. So the birth is ended. That's what it is. The holy life fulfilled. When you talk about the holy life, you know that we always going from the taint of ignorance to the taint of sensual desires. Why are we going there? Remember, taint of sensual desire is the post-perception of you taking something as special. We are asking the help of that one while we are living. Let us say when you are eating, sometimes you feel like that it would be good if I can have a little bit of pickle. You know that pickle means that you get some sort of a happiness out of that one. So you are going for taint of sensual desire. You are not going for that one. So he understands there is nothing further for this world. At this particular point, we exceed craving for non-existence. The craving for non-existence is the mental volition path and the consciousness as neutron path. So now we have got rid of that one as well. So he discerns that whatever disturbances that would exist based on the effluent of sensuality, the effluent of becoming, the effluent of ignorance are not present. And there is only this modicum of disturbance that connected with the six sensory spheres, depending on this very body with life as its condition. He discerns that this mode of perception is empty of effluent of sensuality and becoming and ignorance. And there is just this non-emptiness that connected with six sensory spheres, dependent on this very body with life as its condition. Thus he regards it as empty of whatever is not there. Whatever remains he discerns as present. There is this. And so this is entry into emptiness accords with the actuality is undistorted in pure, superior and unsurpassed. So how would a person who is attained to this noble level and has destroyed this cankers, how would that person would live? You know that big rooted taro plant, this was actually shown to me by Mandaladipati Budupaya from Akanita Ramarela. And let us say on a rainy day, there is this flood and this big rooted taro plant, you know, with the leaf and then with the root, and it is actually lifted up and floating on the water. So then if this one is actually, let us say one leaf is there. So if this thing is coming to the river bank, although this trees are now under the water, flooded, but the tree has got these branches, maybe one or couple of leaves coming and to this leaf of the taro plant and get some nutriment, and then that one is actually sustained. Now what will happen if this the leaf and the cone over there, it is actually floating and then it's going to the middle of the river. Then it does not get any nutriment. There are no trees there. So it will die. But how can it die very quickly? And if it is going to a whirlpool or something, then very quickly it will die. So I was thinking, let it go to whirlpool. And then the Mandalajipati Buddhaya was showing me this taro plant is now actually coming toward the river bank. In other words, that we got the volition. So those arahants who go into that level of thing, they are not having volition for the existence or for the non-existence. So that's how they live. When they are going in this arms round, if someone is giving food, they will take it and live. If no one is giving food, then they are happy to attain final Nibbana. You might have heard even the Buddha did not get food sometimes. So, but there are certain places that the food is available. Buddha never told Venerable Ananda, let's go. We will go to that place and have food. If there is not getting, then that is it. Now, if we don't get food and we are happy to go to the end of the world as well. So they don't behave like that. Ananda, whatever contemplatives and Brahmins who in the past entered and remained in an emptiness that was pure, superior and unsurpassed, they all entered and remained in this very same emptiness that is pure, superior and unsurpassed. Whatever contemplatives and Brahmins who in the future will enter and remain in an emptiness that will be pure, superior and unsurpassed, they all will enter and remain in this very same emptiness that is pure, superior and unsurpassed. Whatever contemplatives and Brahmins who at present enter and remain in an emptiness that is pure, superior and unsurpassed, they all enter and remain in this very same emptiness that is pure, superior and unsurpassed. Therefore, Ananda, you should train yourself. We will enter and remain in the emptiness that is pure, superior and unsurpassed. That is what the Blessed One said. Gratified Venerable Ananda, delight in the Blessed One's words. So, how are you going to do the meditation? So, for the meditation, we use the text given over there. You see that the monk went to the arms round and then he saw their women are there, gold and silver, all those things are there. Then after the arms round, he is coming back and he is not bringing any of those women with him. What he did, he applied the mindfulness regarding the body. And this is the foul nature, and they contemplate the rising and passing away phenomenon. Therefore, that perversion is gone. And then he got the emptiness. So the women and, gold and all those things are not here. Empty from those ones. But there is non-emptiness because there's the monks are there. And then he finds that there is this building. So this building is the element of extension. Then all the monks are also element of extension. Then you are driving a bulldozer and then you making this whole thing considering as element of extension, then you see a big area. So then you get a vast mind, because we have seen large area. And then you find that after this one, and that is this, there's no earth. It is the space is infinite. So you go into the space is infinite. To go that one, you should know element of extension, and you should know that element of extension is not mind. And if you don't have doubt about it, then you reach over there. So when you go to the space is infinite, then it's sort of a black space that you see. And then at that time we said that you are in the shortest path over here. And then that we mentioned another two methods going there, that if you understand envy, and envy is stemming from derogation, having understood that link, you give up envy, then you can go to spaces infinite. And then we mentioned the another method, that you know, the girl and the boy, for example, leaving the girl there, the boy is going to the star scenario. So that way also you exceed the form, and then you can go to spaces infinite. That is, you are in this short path. And then you find the whatever feeling that arises depending on the space is infinite is also impermanent. Having understood that one, you went to the consciousness is infinite. That is, you are from mindfulness to the emptiness over here, number 10. And there you see light. And that is your light. And then we also mentioned two methods of reaching that one. If someone understands derogation and what is it stemming from, that is the anger. And then you get rid of this derogation, then you can actually go into consciousness is infinite. Another way is to pay gratitude to those great arahants in the Akanita Brahmarela. But that should come from your heart. Because that I got this help with these diagrams, the diagrams are coming from them. So if it is coming from your heart, then if you are spreading, then you can see their light as well. So now you understand, I'm still allowing this dependent origination to occur. And then you see this particular link of dependent origination. The feeling comes to arise because of the contact. With the cessation of contact, cessation of feeling. In other words, feeling is impermanent. If you understand that one, then you can exceed this consciousness in finite, then you can go to the plane of nothing. So the emptiness to the wisdom over here. And then over there we said that your mind is sort of expanded, opening from the right side, and you see that black space, and there are these white dots of light. And then another way to reach that one is that getting rid of the fraud. Another way to go there is that the taking, you know, empty of self and empty of what belong to self. So when you do that one, in other words, over here you are saying all these people here, this Buddha statues, equipments, none of these things are mine. By doing that one, you can go to plane of nothing. Seventh jhana. And having reached there, then you consider this perception that is remaining, that these things are not mine, is also impermanent. So when you contemplate impermanency, then you go to the neither perception nor non-perception. That is the top line over there. And then when you go there, I mentioned that it's like you are sleeping. And you know, your head is falling and then coming back. And so that is the eighth jhana. Before you reach that one, then you feel certain things. If you don't want to feel those things and go to eighth jhana, then you need to contemplate suffering very heavily. If you have done that suffering, birth, aging, sickness, death, to a great extent, then you can easily go there. It's like, you know, what happened to a vehicle, you know, in a high speed and it is braking very quickly. Then the tires are, you know, making a noise as well, isn't it? Likewise, if you know birth, aging, sickness, death, quite a lot, and then you don't break like that one, you can smoothly go into the eighth jhana. So I mentioned that when you are coming out of eighth jhana, that you see pictures as well. That is your past births, you know, forms. And then this person is still contemplating the arising and passing away phenomena of this perception. So he managed to go into the eighth jhana. How? That you contemplate that this it is impermanent, but you could not understood it's completely impermanent. Remember Carpenter's example. The volitional formation that constructed, they are not mine. To that extent, you understood the impermanency. And but if you continue on impermanency, then you can go to the liberation due to wisdom. That is a complete impermanence. In the three pieces of wood, all of them are impermanent. That's what it is. So there you feel your forehead active, and then you take this perception as not mine, then you get the liberation due to mind. And if you think that perception is suffering, therefore that one you need to go from forward and backward, birth, aging, sickness, death, and death, you are coming back to sickness and so on, coming back to the birth part. I mentioned how to do that one. And then if you do that one, then you get the liberation that is called desireless abiding. And you feel sort of head is split scenario. And then you go to the liberation due to wisdom. And then you understand, I am still allowing this dependent origination to occur. Then you understand if the craving is not there, this whole thing will disappear, all the 12 links. But this craving is not the craving inside. This is the delight that it consisting of the craving for sensuality, craving for existence, craving for non-existence. Then you understand even for craving for non-existence, with that delight also I can't maintain it. And having understood that one, one would be destroying cankers. At that time, what you have is the highest right view, and that includes only the third noble truth, the cessation path. And then I mentioned how such a monk, having destroyed these cankers, how that person is living, using that bhikkhu tara thing that as shown to me by Mandaladipati Buddhupaya. So you are not going to fall because, you know, if you use this one also, you know, if it is impermanent, subject to suffering, and it is changing, is it befitting to regard as mine? So there also you are reaching emptiness. But because this is easy, and don't do that one now, because we need to see in various ways. You know, if you come over here, then you can see the Buddha statue. But you come from that door over there, then you don't see the Buddha statue. You need to see in various ways. And don't be lazy. That's what I'm trying to say. So anyone can do, you know, that mindfulness regarding the body, you know, the foul nature, which you have done, arising and passing away of these 32 parts of dead body, meditation, for example. Anyone can use a bulldozer. You know, make it flat and see a large, vast area, and then you get the expanded mind. And then, depending on your ability, go beyond that one. Don't leave any trace when you are using the bulldozer. So that is the meditation. So let us have a sort of a discussion. Our discussion is a sort of a summary.